Second Hour, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that's in the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for October the 7th, 2018, the first Sunday of October, Marathon Sunday in Chicago. Welcome to our weekly look at the world of politics and policy as we go from City Hall to the State House and all the way to the White House. So time to grab that Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a great start. Well, it's kind of a different view of Marathon Chicago here in the Allstate Skyline studio. We'll be looking from up above rather than the streetscape kind of side. And
we're going to have a bird's eye view of Columbus Drive here.
Indeed. And it was kind of fun trying to navigate my way here to work.
Yes, you told me.
Only
and it wasn't driving necessarily.
No,
it was walking,
just walking
to the building.
Right, and finding certain stairwells that were closed. So kind of backtracking back and forth. So I put in my 26.2 miles already this morning. Whoa.
I did my 26.2 steps. I will be seated for the rest of the day. Thank you very much.
Well, now, you got to assume this is probably good runner's weather.
I mean, well, from the standpoint of it being cooler, yes.
Right.
The humidity is a bit high because of all the moisture we've had right now, 87%.
Yeah, I didn't think of that
but
part of it.
But with temperatures in the upper 50s, that is certainly better than what we've had in past years. You remember, past years we've had temperatures well into the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, it was like heat emergency.
Yeah, heat emergencies, and it's caused some very serious problems. In fact, a couple of tragic results as a result of that over the years. But today, a little bit cooler. It's not raining now, but we can see periods of rain off and on throughout the morning. So I think these folks are prepared for that.
Well, and you got to figure a little bit of rain probably is a good thing, just to kind of
cool you off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, hydrate on the inside and hydrate on the outside.
Yes.
But, although I got to tell you, it started raining, like, I think around 3:30 this morning. And it was like one of those days you just want to go back to bed.
Yeah.
You know.
That's about right. I had just beat the rain coming in, and around 3:30, 3:40 is when it started.
Yeah, well, I think it's a soup day, don't you think?
Oh yeah.
Super chilly.
Well, I thought about chilly, except the temperatures are supposed to warm up again. You know, tomorrow is supposed
80
to
tomorrow.
Be 80.
Yeah.
So I thought it's too early for chilly. I was thinking more like beef barley soup.
It's never too early for chilly.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
A beef barley soup would go well today.
Yeah, I'm thinking a good hearty beef barley soup today.
Yeah, a roast beef sandwich.
That's if I can maneuver my way through the race course to find, oh, man.
And you know, this course meanders
yes.
all over the place.
Well, I mean, literally, you have to kind of plot yep. how to get places.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned, Dave, earlier that last year at this time, and I had forgotten in booking guests that it was Marathon Day, and I had Jim Durkin, the Senate, the Illinois House Republican leader, on, and he literally had to pull the car off the side of the road and call in to do the interview. No way to get down here. So,
ow.
I've arranged that our guests are by phone today.
Everybody's on the phone today.
Well, it's just easier that mm-hmm. way. I mean, we do the work so you don't have to, right?
Nice. That is correct. That is correct. You were relatively trouble-free getting in, weren't you?
Yeah, it's because I left a little earlier than I normally do.
That's
but
right.
Yeah.
Well, I thought I saw you here earlier than normal.
Yes, that was...
Because I know how much you enjoy these mornings.
Well, I enjoy my sleep, yes, but I thought I'd rather get here early than be frustrated sitting in my car figuring out, okay, now how do I get across the river?
Yeah, that's always a treat, always a treat. But how about those Blackhawks?
How about them, huh?
I got to tell you, I was worried when in the first game against Ottawa, the first period, the defense was just garbage.
Dreadful, yes.
And I believe the Hawks had 18 shots on goal in that first period.
Mm-hmm. Only two goals
in it. But they were up 1-0. Then they went up 2-1. And they are losing at the end of the period 3-2.
Right.
And Cam Ward had given up 3 goals on 10 shots.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, oh, no, this is not the way to start the season.
And then?
And then we come back. And then last night, I'm worried because they're losing 2-0 to the dreaded Blues in St. Louis. And lo and behold, I have to admit, I couldn't make it for the overtime. I didn't even know there was an overtime until this morning. And what's gotten into Jonathan Toews? 4 goals, a hat trick last night.
Yeah.
All critical goals, including the game winner in overtime.
Yeah, they were huge. Coach Q, actually, we'll have that audio coming up a little bit later this morning, just talking about the enormity of all 3 goals. One in the first period that got them back into respectability, and then another big goal late in the game, and then the overtime winner. So they were all large goals. And it's interesting, we were talking to John Weideman yesterday on the beat, and I said, you know, it seems to me, and I saw parts of the first game. I said, it seems to me that Toews is a little thinner, a little faster, and was also initiating contact for the first time that I've seen in a long time. And I said, are my eyes deceiving me? And John said, nope, your eyes are not deceiving you. So that's the kind of stuff he worked on. He wanted to get a little lighter, a little stronger, and a little quicker. And he's playing with a chip, whether he wants to admit it or not. People were doubting him after last year.
Yes, indeed.
And he rededicated himself. Not that he's not a hard worker all the time, because he's a tireless worker, but he went about doing it, reshaping the body a little bit, making sure that he was strong enough to kind of compete in a full 82-game schedule, not just at the beginning here. So this is hopefully a longevity kind of a situation with him. And, you know, Kane feeds off of him.
Right.
He feeds off of Kane. So those two guys are off to a good start. And Cam Ward... Hey, listen. It's a better option to me than Anton Forsberg.
Oh no, and I will tell you, even in that first game against Ottawa,
he settled in,
yeah, for the rest of the way, including overtime.
Mm-hmm.
So no, and last night, you know, the Blues are a good team.
They are
a really good team, and to me, this was a test for me to see how well the Blackhawks are going to play in this division, because it's a brutal division.
It's from top to bottom. I mean, there's no easy games in this division whatsoever. And I think they'll be tested a little bit tonight, too. You know, Toronto is one of the odds-on favorites to win the Stanley Cup. They added Jonathan Tavares in the offseason. They have Austin Matthews already. This is a young, hungry kind of a team as well on the uptake. And they'll come into the United Center tonight. It's going to be an emotional night because the Blackhawks are going to have a ceremony to honor the late Stan Mikita. And we'll have that for you here tonight as well. But it's, the red carpet festivities go on today. And it's just a lot of pomp and circumstance. And I don't have any doubt that this team is going to get focused and ready to play tonight.
Well, and a shout out to our WGN TV colleagues, too, for in that first game with Ottawa. They had the 21 logo up in the corner.
That's nice, yeah.
For the game. And it's you know, it's like family, you know. The Hawks are like family.
Yeah.
And we've lost a great member of the family, and it will be good to see him honored tonight. And to think that the Maple Leafs are actually, you know, contenders is also something that I got to wrap my head around.
Yeah, let's see. It was the year of my birth, I believe, that they won their last Stanley Cup, 1967.
I believe that's
sound about right.
Yes, yeah. Yes, that is correct.
So,
how many teams were in the league then?
I think they had 6 back
then.
That
would be correct. Yeah. Yes.
They had 6, and then they expanded in 69 and also in 71 or 72, I believe.
Yes. So, yeah. So they've got something to prove as well. But I did see a stat last night.
Mm-hmm.
I believe when Kane and Toews score, the Hawks have won in 40 consecutive games.
It's actually 44.
Is it 44?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean,
but Hawks, holy crap.
Yeah. 44-0-0 in their last 44 regular season games when Kane and Toews each score a goal.
That's phenomenal. Well, let's hope they can keep it going.
Keep it going is right.
Just keep it going. And, no, I'll take 2 wins right now We need a first-place team after what the Cubs left us with.
Hey, we got the Bears. They're in first place, too.
I know that. I know that. And regardless of what happens today.
They're going to be in first place.
How about that?
Uh-huh.
I mean, although I don't like an idle week this early.
You know, it's interesting because the guys on Hampo, B, and Kaz were talking about it after the game. Now, Matt Nagy says that the bye week comes at a great time. Now, if you're a casual fan or an intense fan, you're thinking, wait a minute, you guys are playing your best football. You're coming off one of your right. best games of the year. Don't you want to play again the next week? And I would think that the logical statement would be, yes, we want to play again right away. But now they have to wait a week, and Nagy gave them the entire week off, and they'll get to work. They're playing the Dolphins in Miami next Sunday.
Well, plus I would think, you know, as the knowing what a brutal sport it is, mm-hmm. as the season goes on, you would rather have that bye week later.
Yep, to heal up.
Exactly.
Yep.
And now you got nothing. I mean, this
yeah.
is it.
Yeah.
But, well, all kinds of things to watch today.
You got yes. that right.
Yes.
Among the things we're watching, gentlemen, is the start of the men's wheelchair division of the marathon. Just got underway.
Very cool.
There we go. There we go. Well, good luck to...
Wave one of the runners beginning at 7:30, 9 minutes from now.
All right. Well, good luck to everybody taking part in that. 40,000 participants plus everybody watching on from the side. It's Marathon Chicago Sunday. Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Andy has the latest sports. Producer Jessica is in for Casera, fielding your calls at 312-981-7200. You can text us at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin, and we're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is getting his running shoes tied. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcast at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson with the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio on this overcast, gray Chicago Marathon Sunday morning. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, no shortage of things to talk about in the world of politics and government. We'll be talking about the Jason Van Dyke verdict and other issues with my guest. After the 7:30 news, we'll speak to my Tribune colleague Hal Dardick. We'll talk to him about all the goings-on, as well as the Cook County Inspector General's finding that Democratic Governor candidate J.B. Pritzker's property tax reassessment involved what the Inspector General called a scheme to defraud taxpayers. And Pritzker's now repaying $330,000 to the Cook County Treasurer. At the top of the hour, we'll speak to my good friend Tony Arnold. He's a political reporter at WBEZ-FM 91.5 and Chicago Public Radio. And he and Dave McKinney have been reporting extensively on the Ron administration's handling of the deadly Legionnaires' disease outbreak at the Quincy Veterans Home in 2015 and what occurred afterward. We'll talk to him about Attorney General Lisa Madigan's criminal and civil investigation into the Ron administration's handling of the outbreak. We'll get a final check of the news and sports at 8:30, and then we'll be joined by Amanda Vinicky. Amanda, of course, is a political correspondent for WTTW Channel 11, Chicago Public Television. We'll talk to her about last week's debate between Rauner and Pritzker, the aftermath of that, as well as the aftermath of the Jason Van Dyke verdict for the shooting of Laquan McDonald. And, you know, that's... actually, a local story that also was a national story on CBS News Channel, even during all of the Brett Kavanaugh goings on, they broke in to show the verdict being read. The decision to convict Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke on charges of second-degree murder and 16 counts of aggravated battery with a firearm. That's one for each shot that killed Laquan McDonald.
May the jury find the defendant, Jason Van Dyke, guilty of second-degree murder. May the jury find the defendant, Jason Van Dyke, guilty of aggravated battery with a firearm, first shot. May the jury find the defendant, Jason Van Dyke, guilty of aggravated battery with a firearm, second shot. May the jury find the defendant, defendant, Jason Van Dyke, guilty of aggravated battery with a firearm, third shot. May the jury find the defendant, Jason Van Dyke, guilty of aggravated battery with a firearm, fourth shot. May the jury find the defendant, Jason Van Dyke, guilty of aggravated battery with a firearm, fifth shot. May the jury find the defendant, Jason Van Dyke, guilty of aggravated battery with a firearm, sixth shot. May the jury find the defendant, Jason Van Dyke, guilty of aggravated battery with a firearm, seventh shot. May the jury find the defendant, Jason Van Dyke, guilty of aggravated battery with a firearm, eighth shot.
And then there was a ninth, and then there was the 10th, and there was the 11th, all the way up to 16, one for each shot that killed Laquan McDonald. A historic day in Chicago, the first conviction, murder conviction of a Chicago police officer for murder in this city in 50 years, one that is going to be evaluated for a long, long time. We've seen some of the changes going on. It's going to be interesting as we watch how the changes occur within the Chicago Police Department, as well as the community and its relationship with the police department. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on your Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to my good friend, talking about all the things that we need to talk about as far as Hal Dardick's knowledge of the Cook County tax system, the Cook County reassessment system. Hal's been a fundamental part of the Tribune's coverage about the questions regarding the fairness of how property taxes are assessed in Cook County. We'll be talking a little bit more in depth about how that property tax reassessment issue plays into now the Democratic and Republican race for governor, the race for governor with Democratic candidate J.B. Pritzker. That's up ahead. Right now, though, it's 7:30. Time for the news. Here's Dave Schwann.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio overlooking the Chicago River, the lakefront, and also Columbus Drive. And I can attest to you, Dave, that the first wave of runners has taken off, and indeed
they sure have.
It is just amazing watching it from up here.
Isn't it something?
Yes, and turning out, going west on Grand over to heading over to State Street. Yeah, the numbers are just staggering watching that.
Nice to have a bird's eye view of this. But everybody is in place now. Things are totally underway. The first wave, second wave will be starting shortly, actually. So
it's an amazing view. Yeah,
second wave starts at 8, and then the final wave of runners at 8:35.
Very good. Keep us on track on everything that's going on with the race, Dave. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Washington, Brett Kavanaugh. He was confirmed to the Supreme Court on Saturday by one of the slimmest margins in American history, closest since 1881, locking in a solid conservative majority in the court and ending a rancorous battle that began as a debate over judicial ideology and concluded with a nation trying to come to terms over sexual misconduct. The vote was 50-48. Now, remember, the week basically began with President Trump using the Kavanaugh nomination to rev up his base looking towards the midterms. And really, that's been the same modus that he's been using. He used it yesterday in Topeka, Kansas. But at a rally in Mississippi, the president mocked Dr. Christine Blasey Ford and her allegations of sexual assault.
36 years ago, this happened. I had one beer, right? I had one beer. Well, do you think it was? Nope, it was one beer. Oh, good. How did you get home? I don't remember. How'd you get there? I don't remember. Where is the place? I don't remember. How many years ago was it? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. What neighborhood was it in? I don't know. Where's the house? I don't know. Upstairs, downstairs, where was it? I don't know. But I had one beer. That's the only thing I remember. And a man's life is in tatters. A man's life is shattered. His wife is shattered. His daughters, who are beautiful, incredible young kids, They destroy people. They want to destroy people. These are really evil people.
Oh, speaking at a forum hosted by Atlantic Magazine, South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham defended the president and said that Trump only said things that were factually true about Dr. Ford.
Whether you like it or not, I really don't care. Here's the point. I've seen what happened to these women. In 1998, it came forward. I don't like what the president said last night. I'm the first person to say, I want to hear from Dr. Ford. I thought she was handled respectfully. I thought Kavanaugh was treated like crap.
Now, Illinois' senior senator, Democrat Dick Durbin, opposed the Kavanaugh nomination and criticized Trump for mocking Dr. Ford.
I hope you'll reach back into your archives and find the opening statement in this conversation with the White House. It came from Kellyanne Conway, and it was about 3 weeks ago, and she said two things that I remember very clearly. First, she said, we are not going to ignore Dr. Ford. We are not going to insult Dr. Ford. Look at what happened last night. Tell me that that wasn't an insult to a woman who was trying to bring back her best, most vivid memories of one of the most horrible days in her life. And to mock her at a political rally as the president did last night is certainly beneath the dignity of the White House.
That's Illinois' senior senator, Dick Durbin. Well, we're going to switch gears and bring things home locally for a busy week in Illinois politics and Chicago government. Joining me on the phone is my good friend Hal Dardick, member of the investigative team over at the Chicago Tribune. Hal, thanks for joining me this morning.
Always my pleasure, Rick.
Well, I figure when it comes to the issues of property taxes and tax reassessment, you're kind of the go-to guy.
I appreciate that. I know a little something about that topic.
Well, and as we saw last week in the race for Illinois governor, there was a finding by Inspector General Patrick Blanchard had issued a confidential report that became public and first reported by the Sun-Times. But basically this report concluding that after all of this talk of toilets and Gold Coast mansions and toilets being ripped out and whatever, that the Inspector General determined that J.B. Pritzker improperly received $330,000 worth of tax refunds and tax breaks in what the Inspector General called a, quote, scheme to defraud, unquote. Now, Hal, you took a look at the report. I took a look at the report. That's pretty strong language, isn't it?
It is. Typically, an Inspector General will lay out the facts. And if they do suspect a crime occurred, they will say it. But he came to, and refer it to proper authorities. But he came to a really strong conclusion, going so far as to cite state and federal statutes for perjury, for
mail fraud,
mail fraud, and conspiracy. So, sort of laying out what might be viewed as a blueprint for a prosecutor to follow in bringing a case. So, yeah, it was very strong language.
And Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox's office says that their special investigative unit is reviewing the findings of this report.
Right, they are. And, of course, a bunch of, one that's sort of partisan, but a bunch of the state's Republican congressional contingent has asked the U.S. attorney to look in, and, of course, the feds never tell us what they're doing, but it's possible that at least they're taking a look at it, too.
Now, one of the things, the Pritzker's tried to downplay this. He's agreed to repay the $330,000 in tax breaks and benefits, but he says, well, there really isn't anything new in this report, although it did contain, affidavits from and emails regarding when toilets were taken out and remodeling being done. There was affidavits claiming that this mansion was uninhabitable, predating the 2015 toilet issue, going back to 2012.
Right. What the Priskers did was they sought a what's called a certificate of error. It's basically asking the assessor to reassess your property and do it retroactively for 3 years, so that it's 10% of its value, which gives you, of course, a huge tax break. In this case, it was $330,000. But as part of that, they submitted these affidavits. And the affidavits sort of implied that one of the primary reasons that there was uninhabitable, which is the sort of qualification for getting the certificate of error, is that the toilets weren't in the home. So that, of course, is misleading in the sense that there was an email that he also cited, and this is sort of central to the whole report, from the general contractor for the rehab of the Astor Street Mansion to the plumber. And what it says, and I'm going to, I just happened to know we were going to discuss this, so I pulled it out, and it's pretty short, but she is going to have the house reassessed as an uninhabitable structure. Now, there he's talking about M.K. Pritzker, J.B. Pritzker's wife. To do this, she would like to have us pull all toilets and cap all toilet lines in the house. Then after the reassessment, she would like us to put the first floor toilet back in and have this as the one functioning bathroom in the place. So basically, what if the general contractor is being accurate there, JB's wife said, you know, because we're going to have it reassessed, we want to pull the toilet to strengthen our case, which, of course, you know, goes beyond the other things that may have been wrong with the house, and greatly strengthens their attempt for a certificate of error. And then the two affidavits, which are identical, says the property has been vacant and uninhabitable since January 1st, 2012 to present, and this is, I think, in October of 15 that these affidavits were written. There are no functioning bathrooms or kitchen. The interior stairwells are unsound. So, although it doesn't state that those toilets were out since January 2012, it uses it as justification for explaining why it was uninhabitable. So you could say that it strongly implies that. And then the stairwells, it was one of the banisters was braced, but the inspector general points out that when they removed the toilets, they used the stairwells to get the toilets out. They carried them down the stairwells. And what's also interesting about those affidavits is that they one is signed by M.K. Pritzker's brother, and another is signed by the personal assistant, her personal assistant, and another one is notarized by J.B.'s executive assistant. So all of that, despite what Mr. Pritzker said, is new information to the public.
We're speaking with Hal Dardick, my Tribune colleague at the Chicago Tribune. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio. And joining me on the phone is my Tribune colleague, Hal Dardick. We're talking about the controversy surrounding Democratic governor candidate J.B. Pritzker and property tax assessments that he received on a Gold Coast mansion adjoining the one he owns. And the Cook County Inspector General saying that those were improper and were part of a scheme to defraud taxpayers. And, you know, Hal, one of the big questions I've had in this is, you know, we've been in this race for governor, we've been talking toilets for a long time.
No doubt.
And You know, Governor Rauner has run several ads about this, and one with a Pritzker lookalike showing workmen hauling toilets out of a mansion, dubbing him the porcelain prince of tax avoidance. You know, there was the take off the Pritzker Plumbing Company kind of thing. And part of me wonders that because, you know, you have the governor now today saying this is as serious as a heartbeat, you know, this is a heart attack. This is a real serious issue. This is not a joking matter. And I have to wonder, after all the time that in those kind of lighthearted ads, are people really going to pay any attention to this?
Yeah, I think that that's a really valid question, because people don't read these stories as much as we read, like, with, you know, super.
They read our stories. Come on, you know that.
Well, they read them, but they don't notice all of the nuance, and they start reading this story. They say, well, we knew there was an issue with the toilets in the reassessment. And what exactly is new here, and they move on, and especially in a week that, like we just had, and
right,
when there was so much news in the world, whether it was the verdict in the Jason Van Dyke case locally or the Kavanaugh nomination nationally, it may just get lost in the noise, so to speak, and folks we'll just move on, and it won't register.
Our short attention span society. You obviously mentioned the Van Dyke conviction, and you've spent a lot of time over at City Hall. There's a lot of speculating that, you know, it's because of the whole issue of the Laquan McDonald shooting, murder, the video delay in the video being released, that's why Mayor Emanuel didn't seek a third term. But I want to look prospectively. What's the real impact here for this city?
I do think that in the short term there was a sense of relief, because there was a verdict that a lot of the activists that actually helped bring this case to the fore and used it as a symbol of decades-long endemic race problems, that justice had been done. And so the prosecutor, Special Prosecutor Mr. McMahon, said, well, there's a chance for the city to heal, but there's so much more to come as a result of this. There is another trial coming up in the coming months of three other police officers who have been accused of helping to cover up the exact nature of this shooting. And I think you'll see a lot of people thinking, well, it's perhaps proper that Mr. Van Dyke was convicted in this case, given the evidence, but it's also important that police are held accountable for what even, you know, the mayor said was a code of silence for wrongdoing among the police department. And then you have the consent decree, which is in the works, which would hopefully change the way policing is conducted in this city and address this decades-long problem that there have been so many attempts to fix over so many years, but it still persists.
And of course, it's fodder for our ongoing mayoral campaign.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the primary issues. Of course, you've got Lori Lightfoot, the former police board
police oversight
chief,
right.
and she's in the race, one might argue, primarily because of this overall issue for Tony Preckwinkle, the county board president that's in the race now, is justice or a reform of the justice system has been a huge issue. You've got a former police chief who got fired over this, and Gary McCarthy, who's in the race. It will certainly continue to be fodder for the campaign, and one of the primary issues in addition to the city finance.
That's Hal Dardick. He's part of the great investigative team at the Chicago Tribune. Hal, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more right after this.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson on the Chicago Marathon Sunday. As we've been saying, battling controversies between the candidates for governor, Attorney General Lisa Madigan is looking at a criminal or civil investigation over the deadly outbreak of the Legionnaires' disease that began in 2015 and has basically continued annually at the Quincy Veterans Home. Here's what the governor had to say at last week's debate.
Our team did everything they could to make sure that our veterans were kept safe and their health care was protected. As soon as the Legionella infection was determined, we took action to notify residents, notify staff, and begin the process of protecting the veterans by treating the water, bringing in national experts from the Center for Disease Control, and implementing their recommendations.
Now, Democratic Governor candidate J.B. Pritzker, as we said, has been accused by the Inspector General of Cook County on those property tax breaks at an adjoining Gold Coast mansion he owns. Inspector General called it a scheme to defraud the taxpayers. Here's how Pritzker described the issue in that debate.
This was an internal memo that was leaked for political purposes about problems in the assessor's office. I've said for some time now that there are real flaws in our property tax system, but as it pertains to me, there was nothing new in this report. I've said all along this was a renovation project that was underway. It was halted because it was unclear whether the home would be sold or put up for rent. And then subsequently, that project restarted, and all the taxes that were assessed on that property were paid.
Now, joining me now with more on these controversies is Tony Arnold. He is the great political correspondent for WBEZ-FM and Chicago Public Radio. And Tony and Dave McKinney have been doing yeoman's work and kind of unraveling the stories surrounding the Quincy Veterans Home, and who knew what when that deadly Legionnaires outbreak broke out in 2015. Tony, thanks for joining me this morning.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So there was the governor at last week's debate. We took steps immediately. We did everything that we were told to do. That's not what the emails show.
Well, that line that Governor Rauner gave in the debate is very similar to what he's been saying since our reporting began on this issue, really last December is when we first published, so it's been almost a year now. And the emails that the most recent story that we published this week came from reviewing 50,000 documents that the state turned over to us through an open records request. And to your point about what they show, we found that these documents show a pattern of a slow or incomplete response to multiple outbreaks over multiple years, multiple cases over every year that Rauner's been in office, really.
Well, one of the things, too, I've noticed lately is that, and I think it's an acknowledgement that when the governor says his administration moved in an expedited manner on this, is that then he points out, well, Legionnaires isn't a contagious disease, so you don't necessarily need to let people know, you know, en masse, which, you know, kind of that belies the issue of people who have frail elderly residents in this veterans home who are susceptible to the Legionella bacteria, which, you know, creates a pneumonia problem.
Yeah, I'd say two things to that. One is Legionnaires is not contagious. It's a bacteria in the water that is, you know, it's breathed in, say, through a hot shower or something like that is how it can cause pneumonia symptoms in a in a person. But as far as that statement from Governor Rauner, he actually himself signed a new state law this year that changes how the state has to notify or let people know of an outbreak of something like Legionnaire's disease at a veteran's home. So that actually what his own administration has done so far in the previous 3 years, it by law now cannot do that same method again. This new law says that within 24 hours, they have to notify residents and their emergency contacts or, you know, their next of kin who are whose maybe parents are at staying at one of these veterans' homes, in addition to notifying staff, posting signs around the veterans' home to let people know that there's an outbreak going on.
Yeah, because it's not just the residents, but staff themselves were not aware to the full extent that they should have been.
Yeah, and we've reported that Rauner's own Labor Department found that the Veterans Affairs Department did not effectively notify all employees about the outbreak, at least in the 2015 instance. And that's coming again from Rauner's own administration, a finding of fault with how they handled that 2015 outbreak.
We're speaking with Tony Arnold, political correspondent for WBEZ-FM in Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Skyline Studio, overlooking the Chicago River and the Chicago Marathon Runners on Columbus. And joining me on the phone is Tony Arnold, political correspondent of WBEZ-FM, Chicago Public Radio. And we've been talking about the issue of the Quincy Veterans Home, the work that WBEZ has done in looking into the incidence of Legionnaire's disease that have killed 14 people since 2015 at this facility, the state's handling of it. Certainly a potent political issue, but you also on the other side have J.B. Pritzker's plumbing problem and property tax issue.
Yeah, and you know, interestingly, both candidates it came out this week that both candidates were under investigation by different bodies. Attorney General Lisa Madigan announced that she's opened an investigation into Governor Rauner's handling of the Legionnaires outbreak at the Quincy Veterans Home. That could be criminal and civil, as you mentioned earlier. We'll see what she comes up with and when. It's not clear when that investigation began, but she did say that one way that would work is using the grand jury process at the Adams County Prosecutor's Office, which is where the Quincy Veterans Home is located. And you had the state's attorney there telling my colleague Dave McKinney and I that one could wonder if this is a politically motivated investigation. Then, on the other hand, it's J.B. Pritzker, as you mentioned, State's Attorney Kim Fox here in Cook County, said that this matter is being handled by the Special Prosecutor's Unit, and for J.B. Pritzker's rehabilitation, I guess, and removal right. of toilets of his Gold Coast mansion. And again, you don't know exactly to what extent that is an investigation, or you know what they intend to do with it.
Yeah, and so we're basically coming down to a race where each are finger pointing at each other about which is the bigger criminal, which is a great way to enter the last month of the campaign.
Well, it is. Yeah, right. As far as the Legionnaire story goes, which is, this has taken a year of reporting to get to this stage. Whether this is criminal or not, I don't know. I guess this is Illinois, right? So this is how it goes here, because as Rauner mentioned after the debate, this past week, he said, well, what happens if J.B. Pritzker wins and then he gets indicted? because of his toilet issue. How many previous governors have been indicted now in Illinois? This is the state of politics here in Illinois in 2018.
Isn't that the case? I want to switch gears with you and talk with you briefly about the Jason Van Dyke verdict, and I asked this of Hal Dardick. What do you think the overall effect is for the city going forward?
Well, I'll tell you, I was covering the protests through downtown, the demonstrations, I guess I should call them, through downtown after the verdict was read, and the people who chose to listen to this location as the place to listen to the verdict and respond and comprehend it, standing outside of City Hall, they were there to make political statements and looking at this politically and how can we have a say in where the city is going to avoid more situations like this. They targeted the mayor's race and even some aldermen specifically in some of what they were saying. And as they marched through the streets and made their statements, they ended by closing down Michigan Avenue for about half an hour during the Friday evening rush hour. And what was one of my biggest takeaways was how they talked about going forward. They advised people as they broke up and went home, don't go home alone. The police are here and they're watching you and they're not here for us. And so be careful. They might be following you. And it was this message of still the distrust of the police and, how the two sides come together with that. I don't really know. The point of making the political statements, what they said was they want to have the mayor's office to be able to negotiate that FOP contract. And so, there's still a lot of work to be done coming out of this verdict.
And that's going to be one of the chief jobs of the next mayor of this city, is to try to create that rapprochement between the community and the police.
It is, and that's no small task. I think it's going to be, I've already seen a little bit in how the attorney general candidates have talked about the consent decree. It can get pretty in the weeds pretty quickly,
right,
if you're not into this, but this is going to apply to the mayor's race and several other candidates as well. And so I think it's up to residents too to just kind of be informed about what these issues are, whether they see them every day or not, to make sure that they know what is being discussed here, because this is going to be a major factor in how a lot of people are thinking about, how the candidates are thinking about the position of mayor or these other elected offices that are up even before February's election and here in November.
It all bears, and it does make sense, and you don't have to get all the way into the weeds on the consent decree, but just the mere fact that we have a federal oversight going on, a federal monitor, mm-hmm. that says an awful lot about what's been going on in the city.
It does, and I think, we'll see who the final candidates are for mayor. There's honestly too many for me to even keep track right now, and it's my job to do that.
Right.
But I would say that as this, as maybe people take another look at this and either join in or not, I think it'll be contentious, obviously, as everything is here in Chicago politics, but I also think it'll be pretty informative to see how people turn out for this specific issue when you look around at the geographic parts of the city and who they decide is in their corner on this specific issue of policing.
That's Tony Arnold, political correspondent for WBEZ-FM, Chicago Public Radio. Tony, as always, thank you for joining me this morning.
Okay, thanks, Rick.
We'll be back with more after this. People who have frail elderly residents in this veterans home who are susceptible to the Legionella bacteria, which creates a pneumonia problem.
Yeah, I'd say two things to that. One is Legionnaires is not contagious. It's a bacteria in the water that that is, you know, it can, it's breathed in, say, through a hot shower or something like that, is how some, it can cause pneumonia symptoms in a person. But as far as that statement from Governor Rauner, he actually himself signed a new state law this year that changes how the state has to notify or let people know of an outbreak of something like Legionnaire's disease at a veteran's home. So that actually what his own administration has done so far in the previous 3 years, it by law now cannot do that same method again. This new law says that within 24 hours, they have to notify residents and their emergency contacts, or, you know, their next of kin, who are whose maybe parents are at staying at one of these veterans' homes, in addition to notifying staff, posting signs around the veterans' home to let people know that there's an outbreak going on.
Yeah, because it's not just the residents, but staff themselves were not aware to the full extent that they should have been.
Yeah, and we've reported that Rauner's own Labor Department found that the Veterans Affairs Department did not effectively notify all employees about the outbreak, at least in the 2015 instance. And that's coming again from Rauner's own administration, a finding of fault with how they handled that 2015 outbreak.
We're speaking with Tony Arnold, political correspondent for WBEZ-FM in Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Skyline Studio overlooking the Chicago River and the Chicago Marathon Runners on Columbus. And joining me on the phone is Tony Arnold, political correspondent of WBEZ-FM, Chicago Public Radio. And we've been talking about the issue of the Quincy Veterans Home, the work that WBEZ has done in looking into the incidence of Legionnaire's disease that have killed 14 people since 2015 at this facility, the state's handling of it. Certainly a potent political issue, but you also, on the other side, have J.B. Pritzker's plumbing problem and property tax issue.
Yeah, and you know, interestingly, both candidates it came out this week that both candidates were under investigation by different bodies. Attorney General Lisa Madigan announced that she's opened an investigation into Governor Rauner's handling of the Legionnaires' outbreak at the Quincy Veterans Home. That could be criminal and civil, as you mentioned earlier. We'll see what she comes up with and when. It's not clear when that investigation began, but she did say that the one way that would work is using the grand jury process at the Adams County Prosecutor's Office, which is where the Quincy Veterans Home is located. And you had the state's attorney there telling my colleague Dave McKinney and I that one could wonder if this is a politically motivated investigation. Then, on the other hand, it's J.B. Pritzker, as you mentioned, State Attorney Kim Fox here in Cook County, so that this matter is being handled by the Special Prosecutor's Unit, and for J.B. Pritzker's rehabilitation, I guess, and removal right. of toilets of his Gold Coast mansion. And again, you don't know exactly to what extent that is an investigation, or you know what they intend to do with it.
Yeah, and so we're basically coming down to a race where each are finger pointing at each other about which is the bigger criminal, which is a great way to enter the last month of the campaign.
Well, it is. Yeah, right. As far as the Legionnaire story goes, which is, this has taken a year of reporting to get to this stage. Whether this is criminal or not, I don't know. I guess this is Illinois, right? So this is maybe this is just how it goes here, because it's, as Rauner mentioned after the debate this past week, he said, well, what happens if J.B. Pritzker wins and then he gets indicted because of his toilet issue? How many previous governors have been indicted now in Illinois? This is the state of politics here in Illinois in 2018.
Isn't that the case? I want to switch gears with you and talk with you briefly about the Jason Van Dyke verdict, and I asked this of Hal Dardick. What do you think the overall effect is for the city going forward?
Well, I'll tell you, I was walking, I was covering the protests through downtown, the demonstrations, I guess I should call them, through downtown after the verdict was read, and the people who chose to listen to this location as the place to listen to the verdict and respond and comprehend it, standing outside of City Hall, they were there to make political statements and looking at this politically and how can we have a say in where the city is going to avoid more situations like this. They targeted the mayor's race and even some aldermen specifically in some of what they were saying. And as they marched through the streets and made their statements, they ended by closing down Michigan Avenue for about half an hour during the Friday evening rush hour. And what was one of my biggest takeaways was how they talked about going forward. They advised people as they broke up and went home, don't go home alone. The police are here and they're watching you and they're not here for us. And so be careful. They might be following you. And it was this message of still the distrust of the police and, how the two sides come together with that. I don't really know. The point of making the political statements, what they said was they want to have the mayor's office to be able to negotiate that FOP contract. And so, there's still a lot of work to be done, coming out of this verdict.
And that's going to be one of the chief jobs of the next mayor of this city, is to try to create that rapprochement between the community and the police.
It is, and that's no small task. I think it's going to be, I've already seen a little bit in how the attorney general candidates have talked about the consent decree. It can get pretty in the weeds pretty quickly,
right,
if you're not into this, but this is going to apply to the mayor's race and several other candidates as well. And so I think it's up to residents too to just kind of be informed about what these issues are, whether they see them every day or not, to make sure that they know what is being discussed here, because this is going to be a major factor in how a lot of people are thinking about, how the candidates are thinking about the position of mayor or these other elected offices that are up even before February's election and here in November.
It all bears, and it does make sense, and you don't have to get all the way into the weeds on the consent decree, but just the mere fact that we have a federal oversight going on, a federal monitor, mm-hmm. that says an awful lot about what's been going on in the city.
It does, and I think, we'll see who the final candidates are for mayor. There's honestly too many for me to even keep track right now, and it's my job to do that.
Right.
But I would say that as this, as maybe people take another look at this and either join in or not, I think it'll be contentious, obviously, as everything is here in Chicago politics, but I also think it'll be pretty informative to see how people turn out for this specific issue when you look around at the geographic parts of the city and how they who they decide is in their corner on this specific issue of policing.
That's Tony Arnold, political correspondent for WBEZ-FM, Chicago Public Radio. Tony, as always, thank you for joining me this morning.
Okay, thanks, Rick.
We'll be back with more after this. Up ahead, we'll continue our political discussion with Amanda Vinicky, correspondent for WTTW Channel 11, Chicago Public Television. Right now, though, it's 8:31 on this Chicago Marathon Sunday. Time for the news. Here's Dave Schwann.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. We've been talking about the Pritzker and Rauner battle for governor, and we should not forget that Conservative Party candidate Sam McCann, he was not part of this last debate, but he's gone on the air with the first of his TV commercials, and you're not necessarily going to get to see them here in Chicago. It's a very limited buy. He also was scheduled to be here in the city yesterday on a visit to the South Side. But I wanted to play the ad because it's unlikely you'll probably see it or hear it. But this is Sam McCann in Central Illinois.
It's the same old story. A candidate hitting the road, talking with people, shaking hands, and hoping that the dots connect. But nobody wants to shake those idle hands. They want action. People are tired of being used, tired of being promised by the Rauners and the Pritzkers that change is coming. Well, change hasn't come, and people need action now. They need someone to stand up together with them. I am that man. I'm the only true conservative running for governor. I'm Sam McCann, and I want your vote for governor.
Joining me now on the phone is Amanda Vinicky, a good friend of the program, correspondent for WTTW Channel 11, Chicago Public Television. Good morning, Amanda.
Good morning.
Nothing better than to start with a Sam McCann ad, right? Now, at least when he drops his G's, he comes by it honestly, right?
I think that is true. I've known Senator McCann for some years now after having covered him in Springfield, and that is how he always sounds. So, yes, that is au naturel.
Well, I figure, again, not many people are going to hear that much from him directly. Obviously, he was not part of that last debate. I'm not sure if he will be part of the remaining two appearances that they're supposed to make.
You know, I'm not sure either. I know that there was a 10% polling threshold for
that was the League of Women Voters
past debate, but going forward, I'm not clear, and I have certainly spoken with a lot of people in political circles about that, and, you know, should they be included, should they not? Because it's not just him. There's also, of course, Libertarian candidate Grayson Cash Jackson, who was not part of that either. He doesn't have the same funds as McCann, not up on air at all.
Right,
that union boost.
Right, and
that McCann is getting.
So the two, you were originally supposed to be seeing both of them tomorrow.
Yeah,
something happened. Something happened.
So, from my understanding, this is WTTW works with the Mikvah Challenge to basically we're the host. I've described it as this: if there's a wedding, we would be the hotel. You know, we coordinate, we do a lot of the work, but this is a program that is coordinated by the Mikvah Challenge, part of a curriculum to teach high school students about civics. And as part of that, there historically has been an opportunity for students to ask questions of leading candidates. WTTW did have a program with all of the various Democratic contenders for the nomination. And we did that during the primary and was set on Monday to do one with J.B. Pritzker and Bruce Rauner. Apparently, while the Rauner campaign had agreed in principle to participating, they had not agreed to the date. So the Rauner campaign says this is not backing out or canceling. I will leave it to folks otherwise to determine for themselves how they view it, from a candidate who had said he wanted at least a dozen debates or forums and was blaming Pritzker for not being agreeable to that. And so, yes, midweek last week, apparently the Rauner campaign coordinated with the Mikvah folks to say that Monday wouldn't work. He was just too busy.
Well, and, you know, beware that question from the high school students.
You know,
And I'm not belittling. I'm not belittling them at all.
No,
but it's,
yeah.
But it's,
I've looked over the questions, and there are some pretty pointed questions for both of the candidates, really. Others, I think, are more earnest, and sometimes those can be the most, you know, revealing when it's not the same issues that we have been talking about. The questions, I believe, were students submitted the questions, that is, prior to this week of all of the news with both the toilet tax scandal and the Legionnaires investigation and the verdict in the Laquan McDonald, Jason Van Dyke trial. So that was all, none of those are included, but there are some interesting ones. And we will still on Chicago Tonight have an appearance by Mr. Pritzker. He will be facing questions from the students solo tomorrow night.
Well, and as you said, those kinds of questions, they get them off their talking points.
Which is really hard to do, let me tell you.
Especially in October, yes, and getting the rote answers all the time. But as I spoke with Tony Arnold in the previous segment, I mean, we ended last week with basically each candidate accusing the other of just being criminals. And that's the state of our politics today here in Illinois.
It certainly does not inspire a lot of hope. And so, I mean, I'm not sure what to say about that other than that somebody who covers government and does watch and see a lot of the dysfunction, there are people that are working hard to, I think, try to do the right thing and to advance policy. But at this point in the game, it is, I think, for a lot of people, pretty disgusting and frustrating, and all of that, of course, can lead to suppression and voter turnout and people feeling like their vote doesn't matter, and, you know, that we get into this whole cycle, I think, on the state and the federal level, of course, and you understand why politicians stick to those talking points. You don't want a last-minute slip of tongue to ruin your opportunity at elected office, and at the same time, it seems as if it is a form of almost disrespect for the voters by refusing to actually answer a question and share details on the policies that will most certainly, of course, affect their lives. And it's frustrating as a reporter to have to deal with that. And, you know, I'm not a fan of the gotcha question, but I am a fan of any sort of question that will lead us to a better understanding of what is behind the candidates and what it is that they're going to attempt to do when and if elected.
Yeah, there's that thing called substance, you know?
Yeah,
and
I haven't seen a lot of it.
Certainly not lately. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you touched on the issue of Pritzker and the property tax controversy over the toilets. And, you know, I mentioned to my colleague Hal Dardick about the fact that the Rauner camp made this a very lighthearted kind of attack, you know, with the porcelain prince of tax avoidance and the Pritzker lookalike and the Pritzker plumbing company and that. And now you've got the governor, as a result of this Cook County Inspector General's report, you've got the governor, well, this is as serious as a heart attack, and you've got to pay, you know, people, this is not a joking matter. That's the campaign that made it a joke.
Yeah, the campaign made it a joke. And what is really surprising to me is that, all right, maybe voters wouldn't make that connection or care that much if there were new commercials just, I would flash over the TV, Inspector General scheme to defraud. You know, you just highlight that. It seems to me to be a very easy ad to make and to get up and running, particularly when Rauner has not put anywhere near as much money into this race as has Pritzker, but he's got some of the funds to be able to do a quick turnaround and do it. And instead, the ads that we see on air, I mean, the day, 2 days, 3 days after the scandal broke, I believe it was still, you know, just a woman who ended up being evidently a hired consultant paid by the Rauner campaign who says she's a lifelong Democrat but still stands by Rauner. There was nothing about this controversy that most certainly, I think, you know, you talk to people, and a lot of people are frustrated, and Rauner could match that with this guy wants to raise your taxes. I mean, it writes itself, and yet he hasn't taken that approach. It's still just toilets out on the street, and that's about it.
Toilet props. Yeah, toilet props, exactly. We're speaking with Amanda Vinicky, correspondent with Channel 11, WTTW in Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio overlooking the Chicago Marathon runners on North Columbus Drive. And on the phone is Amanda Vinicky, WTTW Channel 11 Chicago correspondent. We're talking about the race for governor and the dueling controversies that exist and the campaign that features two candidates pointing at each other and saying he's the bigger criminal than I am. And the frustration that exists here, you know, there's still a face-to-face meeting between these candidates before the Chicago Sun-Times editorial board this week on Tuesday, and then on Thursday is the final broadcast debate, ironically enough, in Quincy, Illinois. WGEM television and the Illinois Broadcasters Association carrying that debate statewide. But if I'm Governor Rauner, why do I want to do a debate in Quincy?
You know, I thought that was interesting. How that worked out was the Pritzker campaign came out first saying these are the three debates, was really what it is. There have, as you noted, been other appearances, including the Sun-Times, though Pritzker, of course, skipping the Tribune editorial board. Pritzker's campaign coming out with basically, hey, these are the three debates that we will do. The one that was just this past week, and earlier one that was also in Chicago, and then Quincy. And who'd have thought it? I believe that that was very intentional on the Pritzker campaign's part. And
well, I admit, when the Legionnaire.
Go ahead.
When they proposed it, I laughed.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, you know exactly what this is all about.
For sure. It's a jab, jab, jab. And that could have been handled any number of ways. I'm not privy to the inner discussions between the manager and folks on the Rauner campaign to determine, hey, let's accept that. I mean, there could have been a different way. We accept these debates. And who knows, of course, how that would have turned out. As I noted, Rauner folks did try to point the finger at Pritzker for saying he is trying to dodge the opportunity to speak in public. That itself was ironic because Rauner had avoided at all costs any face-to-face forums with his primary opponent, Jeannie Ives, but then said, you know, in this general election, we need to be available to voters, and he wanted to engage in any of these sort of debates. So how and why they accepted that one is beyond me, but it so most certainly will be interesting. Rauner has gone to that veterans home in Quincy several times, and certainly there are individuals, I heard you speaking with Tony, I mean, there are individuals of loved ones who very much blame him for what went on at the veterans home and the spread and the lack of appropriately handling the Legionnaires' disease. Rauner, nonetheless, I think, perceives that he has allies there after having made appearances and worked with the community. So maybe that's it. I don't know.
I do think you're right to an extent that the governor does think he has allies there, because when these outbreaks were occurring, dating back to 2015 and annually after thereafter, but there was a great deal of concern in the business community and among city leaders in Quincy that they were going to shut the thing down. I mean, you had Dick Durbin, you had all kinds of people saying this thing has to be shut down until we can find the source of the Legionella bacteria. But at the same time, you now have a state budget that includes, you know, the beginnings of the money to rebuild that Quincy Veterans Home. And so
the Veterans Home, and also an overhaul of the water infrastructure, really,
for
in
Quincy,
the entire community.
Right, for the entire
the
city of Quincy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I could see where there might be, you know, some viewing him as a hero there. It's going to be a very I think, mixed reaction.
Let's be clear, Rick, in terms of setting, closing down that veteran's home, that's something that, to be clear for Chicago listeners, could be very devastating for Quincy, where you don't have large facilities like you do all around.
Yeah, we're talking.
I mean, that would be a major economic impact.
Yeah, we're talking about these downstate communities we talk all about, where the principal mm-hmm. employer, for the most part, is the state of Illinois because of an institution that's located there.
And, exactly.
And uprooting that, Quincy becomes, you know, just a road to Hannibal, Missouri.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A pretty little water town, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Mark Twain exhibits and all of that. Well, one last question I had, Amanda, is obviously we have this governor's race, but on Friday everything overshadowed by the verdict of guilty verdict of Jason Van Dyke. I've been asking everybody this morning, where do you see this changing the city?
Ooh, you know, I was covering the activists, the people who were part of the movement as they marched through the streets of Chicago on Friday, and there was such a range of emotion. Individuals were jubilant and basically dancing. Others were still clearly raw anger, you could see, and there were a few that wanted to take the march toward, for example, the Board of Trade, saying this is where we've got to stick it to them, where it hurts, in the financial area. And then others who were crying because this was what was considered historic, in that a police officer, particularly a white one, punished for on-duty actions in terms of murdering a black son of the community. So how that changes, I think we will have to, this is a cop-out.
No.
Wait and see, because Saturday, I know this coming week, a lot of those who are leaders of the movement are getting together to figure out their next steps. They want to really have civilian accountability over the police department that is not part of the consent decree that has been agreed to by the city of Chicago and Illinois' attorney general. So, and I'm not sure that that will happen.
And we also have
activists.
And we also have to see how that plays out, you know, in terms of the mayoral race as well.
The mayoral race, a big part of that will be the Fraternal Order of Police contract. So I think there is, and of course, the police, there are those who feel as if they are now under attack and unable to do their jobs for fear that they could be the next Jason Van Dyke. So I think while this is certainly significant and is a verdict, and will be a major point along any sort of timeline in criminal justice and police community relations in the city of Chicago, it is certainly not the end of it. It is a hallmark, but not the end. And there are going to be both sides who are feeling still, as I noted, I think very raw and renewed because of what happened on Friday.
That's Amanda Vinicky, WTTW Channel 11 correspondent in Chicago. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It was my pleasure, and good luck to all those marathoners.
We'll be back with more right after this.